This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, February 6, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, an event fit for your very own Pagnozzi princess, and a one-woman performance parodies what happens after the happily ever after.
Plus, a new facility helps one organization to provide goodwill to the state. But first, the television ad war in Arkansas' Senate race is heating up. Democratic incumbent Mark Pryor and a conservative group backing Republican Tom Cotton are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars each on new spots that began airing today. Pryor's campaign is unveiling two ads featuring people criticizing Cotton for supporting a plan to turn Medicare into a voucher-like system for future beneficiaries.
Retirement is just around the corner for us. That's why I was so concerned when I read Congressman Cotton voted to change Medicare into a voucher system.
The state Republican Party calls the ads misleading. Meanwhile, Americans for Prosperity, a conservative group backed by billionaire brothers Charles and David Koch, announced ads will begin running criticizing Pryor for supporting the federal health overhaul.
Millions of people can't see their own doctors, and millions are paying more and getting less. Obamacare doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
The ad targeting Senator Pryor is virtually identical to one that began airing this week in North Carolina that targets Democratic Senator Kay Hagan. According to a report by the City Wire, although this Senate race may turn out to be the most expensive political campaign in Arkansas history, some political consultants question whether the current round of political advertisements is connecting with voters.
Officials with the Arkansas Department of Human Services say the federal government cannot stop the state from ending the private option. Testimony about the state's unique approach to expanding Medicaid was part of a legislative committee meeting Tuesday and comes in advance of the start of this year's fiscal session next week. Lawmakers are considering cutting funding for the program, which was approved last year. Speaking earlier this week with Roby Brock from Talk Business Arkansas, Governor Mike Beebe said cutting the private option would put an $89 million hole in the state's budget.
I still believe in the legislative process. I still think the legislature is going to deal with logic and money and arithmetic, as I say, or as Clinton used to say. The ideology is one thing, and you can hate Obamacare and you can hate what they're doing in Washington. What Arkansas did in a bipartisan manner, Republicans and Democrats leading together, is to take something and make something better out of it. It's the alternative to the strict Obamacare.
At the legislative committee meeting earlier this week, state finance officials told a legislative committee that the federal government cannot stop Arkansas from ending the program. Continuing the private option will require a 3/4 vote by state lawmakers, a vote the governor says will be close.
When you've got to get 75% in each house, that's 75 out of 100 House members, 27 out of 35 senators, that's tough to get for just about anything, much less something that might be controversial. And so the loss of one vote here or one vote there puts a lot of stuff in jeopardy or a lot of stuff in peril.
But the governor says he's optimistic lawmakers will agree to continue the program.
Yesterday, Arkansas Senate Pro Tem Michael Lamoureux issued a statement saying that he would assume duties that would normally be the responsibility of the lieutenant governor. Lamoureux stated that he would limit his role in assuming duties, though he will serve as presiding officer and president of the state Senate during the upcoming fiscal session. Although he says that he will rely on the 4-person staff in the lieutenant governor's office to assist with carrying out the additional duties, Lamoureux said he would not be signing legislation using the Arkansas State Police as official transportation, nor would he be taking the salary for acting as lieutenant governor.
Democratic gubernatorial hopeful Mike Ross announced his plans yesterday to overhaul the state's income tax structure if he's elected governor. According to Talk Business Arkansas, his plan would involve adjusting the state's income tax brackets first established in 1971 and adjusted in the 1990s, and indexing tax brackets to inflation moving forward. The plan would also involve a tax reduction of 0.1% for all tax brackets. When fully implemented, people making under $9,000 would pay at a tax rate of 0.9%. Those making $75,100 or more would pay at the highest tax rate of 6.9%. As of now, the state's top income tax bracket of 7% starts at $34,000.
Main Street Rogers has received more than $30,000 to help with the renovation of a historic building in downtown Rogers. The organization was awarded a slipcover removal grant from Main Street, Arkansas, to help remove the wooden awning from the Modal Laundry building on Elm Street. The funds will be awarded to the building's owner, and the slipcover removal grant program is designed to help finance the removal of false facades from buildings deemed historic by Main Street, Arkansas. The state's real estate transfer tax funds, the grants program, and nearly $70,000 in grants were awarded to similar projects around the state.
Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around 10 with a wind chill as low as 2 in northwest Arkansas. For the Arkansas River Valley tonight, lows around 18. Tomorrow, cloudy, 20% chance of snow, highs around 30, but a wind chill as low as 3 degrees tomorrow in northwest Arkansas. And for Friday night, cloudy, 30% chance of snow, lows around 25.
This is Ozarks at Large. A remarkable Ozarks Canyon straddles the border of Arkansas and Missouri, northeast of Berryville. Once settled by scrappy farmers, the springs-drenched canyon has been conserved by a Missouri entrepreneur. And as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich discovered, visitors are welcome year-round.
Dogwood Canyon Nature Park is discreetly wedged between steep mountains along Highway 86 near Lambie, Missouri. Visitors must first check in at the main lodge, which operates a gift shop and restaurant. We are met by Chad Phillips, property manager. We're among a half dozen visitors today. But during the season, this place is really popular.
We had probably about 56 to 57,000 people came through in 2013.
Dogwood Canyon was established in the early 90s by outdoor gear mega retailer John Morris.
Johnny Morris, the founder of Bass Pro Shops, he found about 2,200 acres here that he purchased in 1990. And from there, expanded, there's about 10,000 acres total out here. And the 2,200 acres still is the core part of what we use. We're a nonprofit foundation, Dogwood Canyon Foundation, is set up to preserve and protect, you know, the canyon's, you know, natural qualities of it.
Visitors can hike and cycle through this Ozarks Canyon on their own or for a fee take guided tours via open tram, private jeep, or even on horseback. Or purchase a two-day adventure pass and do it all. We, of course, opt for a closed, heated truck tour this frigid Friday morning. We cross one of many constructed low-water bridges, the first on Indian Creek, which, along with Hobbs Creek and Dogwood Creek, are tributaries to the White River, now impounded as Table Rock Lake. One bridge is covered.
Yes, this was built by an Amish family from Seymour, Missouri, and it really does look like it's been here for many, many years. It looks like it's built in 1892 instead of 1992.
We pass a locally hewn log chapel, which houses up to 100 guests, a popular wedding destination. We then follow Dogwood Creek, a classic Ozarks spring-fed crystalline green water course, on through the park.
It is all pretty flat. You can walk or bike this pretty easily without any, you know, stress. You know, most people in the summer, they're like, the first question is it hilly? Because the Ozarks, you know, it's hard to find areas that are flat. And we've tried to design this to follow the creeks, but yet keep it on a level path as much as possible. We didn't have to go through and grade this or anything. We just kind of contoured it around the trees and tried to leave everything as natural as possible.
Chad Phillips lives in the canyon with his family full time. The road curves past a 60-foot high bluff featuring an immense frozen waterfall. But Chad Phillips says in the spring, the entire park is in flower.
Usually early April with the red buds and the dogwoods and the wildflowers is just phenomenal.
And even during peak season, Philip says, you feel as if you have the place to yourself.
Plus, there are places where walkers and bikers, you'll see ahead of us, where they actually go off the path and go up in the woods a little bit and then come back on the path on and off. And we do have a 2.5-mile area of, there's some guided, look at the turkeys. There's a bunch of wild turkeys right there. There's a big one up here in the road. And the turkey, that's one thing I was going to tell you too, there's a lot of wild turkey and deer. And one thing we've actually done to enhance that, we've actually set up food plots and planted crops in different, you know, from beans to beets and all types of bulbs and winter bulbs. And then we actually will have little feeders and stuff for them. And we've drawn a lot more wildlife back in the park so walkers and bikers can come out and see a lot of stuff. Because everybody always asks, that's one of the big questions, are we going to see any wildlife?
Of course, no hunting is allowed, but fishing is for rainbow trout. Fly fishing classes are taught here. Chad Phillips, who started working as a fishing guide, heads a 35-person staff now. We next drive past a very large teepee. This was Osage territory prior to First Nations dislocation.
And that was hand-built by some Native American ladies from out in New Mexico. They come out and built that, and we use it for kids' activities, and there's a fire pit inside we built. We have a flint napper that comes out and shows how to make arrowheads the old-fashioned way, and we do a lot of cool Native American kind of day we have sometimes throughout the year. And then this right here is Great Spirit Rock Shelter. This is where we found the oldest found human skeletal remains in the state of Missouri. So right up under that waterfall, there's three dig sites where they actually found the bones. They found arrowheads, fossilized, looked like pottery chips and stone beads. So somebody lived here. It wasn't like just a burial site. Someone actually lived up here. So we found a lot of areas where it was all undercut. You'll see bluffs on both sides of us where this has all been carved out of here. And water has basically formed this whole canyon over many years.
We do make one stop on our winter expedition at the Glory Hole, a deep turquoise pool fed by a huge waterfall.
This is also one of the favorite places of the bald eagles. And in this season we're in now, the winter, they're here from usually late October, early November, all the way through the 1st of March. They take off. They're just here for the winter, and they come here after the trout.
Up to 12 eagles at a time, Philip says. One of the perks of visiting Dogwood Canyon in winter. Native stone stairs take you high above the pool, and with all the snow melt from this winter, the park is surging with water. We climb back aboard the warm truck, and en route, Chad Phillips mentions that Tom Alley, famous Ozarks hydrologist, mapped the canyon and found 30 cold springs.
And he was like, this is a huge groundwater system. He goes, it's what you see is just part of the water. He said, there's this much more underneath, and you're like sitting on a huge bed of water. And it's coming up different places throughout the park.
We cross the Missouri border into the Arkansas side of the canyon and drive up the mountain into a series of large gated pastures where large animals live. A large herd of deer stare at us as we drive by.
We've got about 48 elk.
The elk are running towards your truck.
Yes, because they know that they think anytime they see vehicles, it's feeding time. So they get used to seeing us. This big guy here, he's probably one of the biggest elk in this male.
Oh, he is.
And they'll drop those antlers off every spring. So next spring, these will fall off right at the base. And he'll grow brand new ones every year.
Compared to elk watching in Boxley Valley on the Buffalo National River, these elk come right up to your vehicle, begging for food. Guides reward the beggars with buckets of grain. The elk, deer, and cattle are traded with other preserves in Arkansas to replenish the herd's genetic diversity. We drive past several longhorn cattle. There are 30 in all, along with 82 bison.
There's one big guy. He's about an 1,800-pound bull. We call him Elvis. He has Elvis hairdo there. That big guy. He's one of our biggest ones. He's been here 16 years, 17 years. Uh-huh. But they're thinking food, too. They walk right up here. But they're pretty docile, but they can be aggressive animals. I wouldn't get out and walk in the herd with them.
Staff grow and harvest plenty of hay for everyone. Speaking of hay, Chad Phillips talks a bit more about Bass Pro Shop founder John Morris, who established this park.
He's a great guy that really cares about the environment and in conservation, as well as, you know, what he has done with Bass Pro Shops and Tracker Boats is just phenomenal. It's just, when I started for him in 95, I can remember he had the Bass Pro Store in Springfield. And from 95 to 2014, I think they've got close to 70 some stores already open, and there's like 12 more in the making, and they're in Canada and Alaska, they're building one, and it's just amazing to watch the growth and how popular it is. But it's an easy thing to be popular when you think about it. What people don't love the outdoors and or some capacity, whether it be camping or fishing or hunting or biking or any outdoor things. I mean, that's something that everybody has a passion for at some point in their life.
If you're not familiar, Bass Pro Shops, established in Springfield, Missouri in 1972 by Ozarks native John Morris, markets outdoor and recreational gear, along with in-house boats and apparel. The privately held franchise, reportedly worth billions, is also a tourist destination, with superstores at our part museum, art gallery, antique store, and aquarium. But Mr. Morris is also committed to natural conservation, in 1987 purchasing Big Cedar Hollow, a rundown resort a half hour northeast of here, now an uber-popular resort. He has since set money aside to establish Dogwood Canyon Foundation, perpetually conserving this pristine watershed, along with patronage dollars, and it's well worth a visit. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to learn more, you can visit dogwoodcanyon.org.
Ahead on Ozarks at Large, a one-woman show catches up with a few favorite fairy tale princesses. after the happily ever after.
For me, I think growing up, one of the deals with falling in love and finding that perfect relationship and getting married and all these things that women have a lot of pressure about and the fairy tales is we grow up with these idealized Disney princesses and this perfect thing. And, you know, at the end, the credits roll and you don't get to see where they fight over money and they, you know, whatever, do all these things. So I took things like The Little Mermaid, and what you see is it's her dating video after she's divorced her Prince Charming, you know? And so it's like her trying to find love again, and her she sings part of your, It's Part of Your World is the parody, but it's called Need Not Apply, and it's her literally going, saying all the things she doesn't want this time.
That's coming up in the final 10 minutes of Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, a little-known Chicago artist gets attention for his unusual sound.
I love the incorporation of the kids singing, and it's this very much a larger-than-life feeling.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
The program begins next at 1 o'clock on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Since the recession, many Arkansans have struggled to find employment, which has actually created a job spurt at one Arkansas firm. Goodwill Industries of Arkansas has doubled its workforce in the last 5 years and added a variety of services for those looking for jobs across the state. Roby Brock, with our content partner Talk Business Arkansas, spoke with Goodwill CEO Brian Iskowitz at their new 576,000-square-foot facility located in Little Rock. Iskowitz told Roby about the facility and the Goodwill's goals for the new humongous location.
The building that we're in, we call the Goodwill Resource Center, and it's a 576,000-square-foot building, and we were able to get it a couple years ago. And over the course of time, we're in about half the building now, and we do all of our operations statewide here. We've got a 22,000-square-foot outlet store where the things that have not sold in our stores are brought here, and they're sold by the pound. So it's a really interesting store if you've never seen one like it. But we also do e-waste, so computer recycling. We have an Amazon bookstore, so books that come through that maybe one of a kind, they're able to be put on the internet and sold. And all of this is able to create jobs for people. So, for instance, in our e-books program, we can have people with severe disabilities working in there, scanning books. What the scanner will do will not only put up a word of accept or reject, but it'll color code it. So, you know, people with limited capacity are able to fully function and excel in a job like that. So we're able to do some job carving to help people, you know, and meet them where they are to be successful. And then over the course of time, we're going to build out offices and have a full-blown career center here where people can come in, work on the resume, get the job training they need to go out and compete in the workforce, be successful, and like we say, build lives, families, and communities.
Tell me a little bit about some of the job building programs that you have, because there's a couple of different silos there that you guys operate in. You work with folks coming out of prisons. You work with folks that maybe just don't, that have low skill sets, that need upgrades. You work with people who have just fallen in the unemployment ranks and are looking for some sort of career counseling. Walk me through with not too much detail, but enough to tell me what are the scope of employment services that y'all offer?
So the most important thing is all our services are free. So anybody can walk into our career center and get help with their resume, interview skills. All they have to do is walk in. But two programs in particular that I want to talk about would be our Horizons program, which is a program geared for people that are aging out of the system, adults, to help them get job skills and job training to be able to compete. As you know, 1 in 88 children right now are being diagnosed with autism. So Goodwill Industries of Arkansas saw this as a huge opportunity to impact the community, and in that particular, the folks that are on the autism spectrum. The other program is our TEO program, which stands for Transitional Employment Opportunities, and that's a program that helps people that have either are coming right out of prison or have criminal backgrounds, get them job skills and job training through a paid employment program that we do, and it's funded through the sale of donated goods. So when you donate to Goodwill, we're able to fund those programs. So it's a 12 to 16 week program that allows somebody to work on their job skills, build a resume, and then we help them get employment outside of that. So they go from being a tax recipient and things that, as a taxpayer, we're paying for to keep somebody incarcerated, to now they're employed, helping their family, and now they're a taxpayer. So, I mean, it's just a great success. And over the past 3 years, our success rate is 92%. When you look at the state, it's between 44 and 50%. So we are really proud of the work that we're doing to help build stronger communities.
A lot of folks see the Goodwill Donation Centers. They may even see stores because you've had a kind of an explosion of growth with both of those types of facilities over the last couple of years. Maybe walk me through, since your tenure here or in some sort of time period, how much has Goodwill grown in terms of locations and employees?
Okay, so I've been here since 2008. So if we use that as the just timeline, we had 140 employees in 2008 when I got here, and right now we're over 600 employees, and we've got two more stores that we're adding. Our store count, including donation centers, in 2008 was 16, and with the two new stores, I believe that'll take us up to 36 across the state. So what that's allowed us to do is serve and place more people. In 2008, we served 1,100 people and placed 89 people in jobs, versus last fiscal year, we served 8,300 people and placed almost 1,300 people in jobs. So it's been a tenfold growth in putting people to work and over eightfold in services.
So you're a nonprofit organization, but you obviously have to keep your books balanced, so you can't operate at a loss. So how does the business model work for Goodwill in terms of the revenue generated from sales of goods, from what you receive from donations? Does that fund all of your programming?
Right. Through the sale of donated goods, we're able to fund 96%. We have, we get some grant revenue. We do a fundraiser every year, so we have some money coming in from that. And then we have some fee-for-service with the state. But 96% of this agency's budget is through the sale of your donations. So the motto we use is donate, shop, change a life, because truly those donations is what makes it all happen.
So when you look to maybe grow or expand a location to another town, you mentioned that you're closing in on 36. What's the business model that's going through your head of how it has to work for it to be a successful location operation?
Well, for us, it's all about donations. So we need to have a population there that can build on itself. So we need to make sure that we're in a populace that can bring donations and then turn around and sell them. So for us, location of our donors. So we're looking high traffic, high rooftop areas.
How many cities in Arkansas do you think maybe still exist that you haven't tapped into yet? If you're at 36 right now, and you have multiple locations in a few of those cities, but most of them you don't. So what's the scope of what you could do?
So one of the things that we've gone to is smaller footprints and smaller towns. So we're going into Batesville, and a typical store for us in Little Rock Market, for instance, is a 15,000 square foot sales floor. Well, the total box in Batesville is going to be 15,000, and it's going to have a career center. So it's going to be a much smaller footprint. Again, it's making sure that you've got what you can do for the community. But for us, nonprofit is a tax status. It's not a business model. We need to make sure that we're getting revenue in order to pay for itself and then fund more programs.
That was Goodwill CEO Brian Iskowitz. He spoke with Roby Brock of our partner, Talk Business Arkansas. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
Wow.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. In just a few minutes on Ozarks, how pampering your princess can lead to big money for other area children.
First, a few notes. Huntsville District Court is canceled for today, but it has been rescheduled for 1 p.m. next Thursday, February 13th. An event that is still on, however, is the Samaritan Community Center. They're looking forward to seeing you at 1 million packs and counting. That's tomorrow morning from 7 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. I believe that's a kind of a snack pack. They pass out snack packs to area children. They do note that if Bentonville Public Schools are closed due to winter weather, the event will be held at the Samaritan Community Center, which is located at 1211 West Hudson Road in Rogers.
And this bit of advice, if you're scheduled to do anything in the next 72 hours and you're unsure, call where you're supposed to be. Wednesday, February 19th, marks the beginning of the Fayetteville Farmers Markets series of Ozarks Craft Workshops. First one will be a fruit grafting workshop at Millsap Farm. It will be taught by Patrick Byers, who's regional horticulturalist with the University of Arkansas, with University Extension. He'll explain and demonstrate the grafting of apple and pear trees. This sounds really interesting. Then there will be an opportunity for each participant to give it a try, grafting pear and apple trees on Millsap Farm. So the tour begins at noon, lunch at 12:30, followed by the grafting class at 1:30. It's going to be about a three-hour event. Should be done by 5. For current craft apprentices and host farmers, the workshop's free. For others, cost $15. That includes lunch. If you plan on attending, they do want you to RSVP to millsapfarms@gmail.com. You can also call 417-839-0847.
The Fayetteville City Clerk's Office is accepting applications for 14 openings on 8 boards and commissions. Applicants must be registered to vote in Fayetteville. Application forms are available at accessfayetteville.org by clicking on the Government tab. Select City Clerk and then Documents. They can be emailed to city_clerk@fayetteville-r.gov. That's a lot. Check our website, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. Or mailed to the City Clerk's Office at 113 West Mountain Street. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. February 28th. Just a few of the openings are a position on the Advertising and Promotion Commission, City Board of Health, Civil Service Commission, and there are quite a few others, but again, just go to their website to look for those.
Also one for the Town and Gown Advisory Committee, which tries to make sure things between city and campus work smoothly. Fayetteville artist Linda Sheets, independent publisher of 2 books with her scratchboard drawings of rescued dogs and cats, has launched another book project on the crowdsourcing website Kickstarter. She has until March 6th to raise $9,500 that she needs for the project. Chicken Scratchin' will be a collection of Linda's scratchboard drawings of backyard and urban chickens from around the world. It will include short stories provided by the owners about the birds. Miller Williams, we all know who Miller Williams is, assisted in the editing of the first 2 books, including granting permission to use 2 of his poems in those books, and will again provide assistance. Local book designer Liz Lester designed and supervised print production on the dog and cat books and will also be the lead designer on the chicken book. She plans to release the book in October. If you'd like more information, you can go to Kickstarter.com, then just search for Linda Sheets.
A kickoff reception for the 2014 Upstream Art Project will be held next Saturday, February 15th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Fayetteville Underground. Project representatives and previous artists will be there to answer questions about the upstream art and to show off last year's or previous year's art. This is a program where artists are invited to paint around a storm drain to draw attention to what we're putting down our storm
drain. And to remind you that it doesn't just go to some mysterious place.
No.
All goes downstream.
Mm-hmm. And they do ask, they're calling for artists. There are 12 storm drains for this year's project. They're asking that all the messages or all the designs contain the message drains to creek. Applications are due March 14th and all the art must be completed by May 20th. Those ones that are approved and accepted. For more information, contact Jane Maganot with the Cooperative Extension Service.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the drains to creek message can be in either English or Spanish, correct?
Right. Okay. Right. Because it's not just in Fayetteville, although the reception's at the Fayetteville Underground. I mean, it's all over Northwest Arkansas.
There you go.
Yeah. So contact Jane by calling 479-444-1755.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday night from 10 till midnight and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. On this week's Friday edition of the show, I'll be double dipping two tracks from many great recordings. In fact, so great that I couldn't stop at one track. So we'll hear two cuts from Percy Heath and Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd, Chet Baker, Grant Green, Danilo Perez, and more. That's Shades of Jazz this Friday at 10 p.m.
It is Thursday, February 6th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Planning ahead.
Always a good idea.
A new session of the Knox Street Book Club starts February 13th at the Clayton House in Fort Smith.
This is exciting stuff.
This one's going to be fun. It is a three-Thursday review of A Tour on the Prairies by Washington Irving.
Mm.
Cool
right.
stuff.
Yes.
And it's led by Marcus Woodward, who has been a teacher of social studies in Fort Smith Junior Highs for 29 years.
Wow.
He's a historical reenactor. He owns a collection of, is it swords?
I believe so.
Military weapons. He had three grandfathers who fought in the Civil War. And so we ask him three questions about why he does this.
Mm-hmm.
Ask him what got him interested in American history, and he said that he grew up in a house that his paternal grandfather built. His father slept in the bed he was born in until the day he died on the same property,
oh, wow.
and he still
wow.
lives there.
Wow.
So he kind of didn't have a choice about the whole history
right.
thing. His first memory of hearing his family history was kind of surprising. He said the Civil War was never talked about in his family.
His grandfathers, they fought for
the North.
Very good.
Well, and he said they didn't discuss that because he believed, he just grew up thinking they were Confederate.
Huh.
And was shocked when he found out the truth. And then he found an 1862 cavalry carbine in the smokehouse behind the house. And he thinks that perhaps it belonged to one of his great-grandfathers.
Do you know which company they were in by any chance?
First Arkansas Cavalry.
Oh, my. Okay.
So there's his Civil War party fought in the Battle of Fayetteville last year. And he hopes that his audiences, like all historians, I hope to stimulate further discussion and research into important local topics that have been shared with the public little before now. So the Washington Irving thing, everybody knows the legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Right.
Everybody knows Rip Van, is it Rip Van
yep.
Winkle?
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
But I didn't know this book existed.
I didn't either until I got a release about this series.
So I'm now off to look for the book.
Before we go?
Yes.
A couple days ago, I mentioned a movie that was shot in Arkansas.
Oh, you remembered.
It's called End of the Line. It was produced by Mary Steenburgen in 1987. Let me read you the cast, because I did correctly remember that Levon Helm and Wilford Brimley were in it. Also in it, very young actor by the name of Kevin Bacon. Mm-hmm. In her third movie ever, Holly Hunter.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mary Steenburgen was in it. So you've got Holly Hunter, who won an Oscar, Mary Steenburgen, who's won an Oscar, Barbara Barry, and a very young Bob Balaban.
Wow.
End of the Line, made
and
in 1987.
Where was it shot?
I believe in Central Arkansas.
Well, cool. Mary Steenburgen's from Arkansas, right?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
He has a head full of the most interesting things.
Wikipedia helps, too.
It sure does.
Yeah, most of it's still in his head, which is more than the rest
remembers.
Of us can say.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, who are you again?
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
During the month of February, we often think of Valentine's Day and showing loved ones we care. If you want to show your local community that you care, there are several fundraising events this month that benefit Northwest Arkansas nonprofit organizations. Go Red for Women is scheduled for next Tuesday at the John Q. Hammonds Convention Center in Rogers. The learning event, which benefits the American Heart Association, includes free health screenings, a personality auction, and that's spelled with like P-U-R-S-E. A personality auction. Keynote speaker will be Rachel Ray. More information at nwagored.org. AHAEevents.org.
That's Rachel Ray, the
yes.
cook. Cool.
Yes.
Cool. A week from today, that same venue will host Youth Bridges' 6th annual It's a Wonderful Life Gala. The event will help celebrate the organization's 50th anniversary. Guests must register for the event by 5 p.m. Monday. Details can be found at youthbridge.com.
The annual Beaver Lake Polar Plunge, which benefits Special Olympics Arkansas, has been rescheduled from this Saturday to next Saturday, February 15th. Now, before anyone makes a joke that it's too cold for a polar plunge, I salute their sanity, right?
I wouldn't do it.
Exactly.
I mean, even in, like, May, that water's cold.
Right. So I think it's the proper move. The plunge will now take place at Prairie Creek Marina with registration beginning at 10 a.m. The plunge itself is at 11 a.m. Costumes are encouraged. You can visit SpecialOlympicsArkansas.org for more. Again, that new date, Saturday, February 15th.
On February 21st, the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation's Northwest Arkansas Wine Opener will be at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. This fundraiser features an evening of wine and food tasting, as well as live and silent auctions. For more, cff.org/chapters/Arkansas.
Doubletree Suites in Bentonville will host Havenwood's Angel Gala February 22nd. Proceeds benefit the Havenwood Transitional Housing Program for single parents and children. More information about that event available at nwahavenwood.org.
The Art Center of the Ozarks will be rocking at the bandstand during its 47th annual ball and auction, February 22nd at the Fayetteville Town Center. Guests can dress in 50s-era clothing or cocktail attire. This annual event brings in 15% to 20% of the ACO's operating budget. Details can be found at artscenteroftheozarks.org.
And on February 23rd, a Sunday, hungry residents can grab their muffin tins and head to the Northwest Arkansas Convention Center in Springdale for Soup Sunday. The family-friendly fundraiser helps Arkansas advocates for children and families improve the lives of low-income kids by changing public policy. For more information, aradvocates.org. Yes, the disclaimer.
Yeah.
The person who runs that office in Northwest Arkansas is my wife, Laura Kellums.
Well, I'm hungry. I'm excited for Soup Sunday. It's lunch. It's lunchtime. Anyway, if you're looking for another family-friendly fundraising event in February, you may be interested in a new one that's being organized by Pagnozzi Charities. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Young girls often enjoy playing dress-up and perhaps even pretending to be their favorite Disney princess. Their role models could be newer heroines like Tiana and Rapunzel, or classic princesses like Snow White and Cinderella.
A dream is a wish your heart makes when you're fast asleep.
Local girls will have the chance to be treated like a princess for a good cause later this month during Pagnozzi Charity's inaugural Princess for a Day event. Kelly Atchley, executive director of Pagnozzi Charities, says her best friend came to her with the idea for the fundraiser after having seen it organized in another town. Atchley says the event is a great fit because there's nothing like it in the area.
I think we found the perfect fit because our organization grants support scholarships for children kindergarten through eighth grade in Northwest Arkansas. These are kids that their families can't afford for them to play normally, can't afford the equipment, things like that. And one of the most expensive sports to help with is actually gymnastics and dance, and because they're a monthly reoccurring fee. And we used to help a long time ago with them, but we've had to stop because of the expense. But this event will actually go to fund scholarships for dance and gymnastics, so we can help some little girls do those things.
Girls can come dressed up in their favorite princess outfits to the Parish Hall in St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville, February 22nd, to have their makeup done and their nails painted. Guests can also create a crown or a wand in the craft area and enjoy cupcakes and juice as a snack. The event will also feature appearances by Cinderella, Snow White, Rapunzel, Jasmine, Aurora, and Tinkerbell, and girls can have their photos taken with the princesses if they like. Pagnozzi Charities was founded in 1999 by former St. Louis Cardinal, University of Arkansas Razorback alumni and coach Tom Pagnozzi. According to the nonprofit's website, the organization was a way to give back to the university's baseball program, which helped launch his professional career. Today, the organization has a youth sports scholarship program, which has helped more than 5,000 athletes. Executive Director Kelly Atchley says in order to become eligible for a scholarship, athletes must fill out an application.
They have to first register for the sport and tell the organization that they're going to apply for a Pagnozzi scholarship. Then they do our scholarship application, which they have to provide income information and all kinds of things to us. And they have to meet, we go by DHS income guidelines. So if the kids qualify for free or reduced lunch at school, they would probably financially qualify for our scholarships. But we go on a first come, first serve basis for each sport season. We just finished granting for soccer for the spring, and we're starting to get baseball and softball scholarships in now.
Ashley says they mainly give grants for soccer and baseball, but they also provide assistance with basketball, some day camps, and a little bit of tennis if they can. The average scholarship is about $50, and Ashley explains their awards typically cover only 50% of a sport's registration cost.
That way the family is putting in a little bit on their own, because we found if we helped completely that some of the kids wouldn't show up and they would just kind of wash it off if they didn't like it. But we're kind of taking the steps to make sure that the kids we're helping are actually following through with the season and things like that.
When making a donation to the organization, local residents also have the option to adopt a player, and they can do that in any increment they wish. While Pagnozzi Charities works with young athletes in Benton and Washington counties, Ashley says they've also been able to give some scholarships to children in Boone County because the nonprofit has some supporters in that area. With all of the various ways to help children in need, why is it also important for them to have access to playing sports?
We have, you know, done a lot of research on that, and we find that kids who participate in sports build a better sense of independence and self-confidence, and they're doing better in school because they need the grades to be able to play, to be able to participate. They most of the time stay off of drugs and alcohol longer than other children or all together, because they're more concerned about their body being healthy and being able to play and all of that. It's all about health and wellness.
Pagnozzi Charities organizes a number of fundraising events throughout the year, including a golf tournament, a bass fishing tournament, and a corporate games event, which is essentially a field day featuring outdoor athletic competitions for adults. What makes the new Princess for a Day event so unique is, in addition to not involving sports like the group's other fundraisers, it is also the first event where children can be present. Ashley says some of the kids who have benefited from the scholarships have already registered for the event, which she thinks is going to be a lot of fun.
I keep calling it a little mini Disney World adventure, because I know that I might have a 4-year-old little girl, and that's her favorite thing, is to dress up and just get her nails done and be pampered and be all pretty. But, you know, we're not really trying to push the whole be a princess thing. It's just really a fun event to see, for these girls to be able to see that they can help these other girls.
The inaugural Princess for a Day event is scheduled for 1 to 3 p.m. February 22nd at St. Paul's Episcopal Church Parish Hall in Fayetteville. Tickets are $15 for those younger than 3 and $20 for guests who are 3 and older. Executive Director Kelly Ashley expects the event to sell out and encourages people to pre-register, which you can do at pagnozzicharities.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
So this is love. So this is love.
This is Ozarks at Large. Echo Sibley has plenty to say and sing about in her one-woman show, Flippin' Channels in the Estrogen Zone. She uses language, sometimes risque, to ponder about sexuality, sex, and relationships. The longtime resident of Fayetteville, she has 3 degrees from the University of Arkansas, has spent the past 15 months in Italy working on the production and will perform it Sunday and Monday nights at the Stolen Glass in Fayetteville, and again on Valentine's Night at Caribe Restaurant and Cantina in Eureka Springs. Echo recently came to KUAF, and she told Katie Hendrickson the current play, which has been featured at the Chicago Sketch Comedy Festival, began when she was trying to revise an earlier one-woman script she wrote while at the University of Arkansas.
And the show just got worse and worse. And finally,
Bob Ford, who everyone knows in Fayetteville, who's an amazing playwright and director and one of my professors at the University of Arkansas, said, okay, what kind of show do you want to write? And I said, I just want to write something really funny. I just want to laugh at myself. I want to laugh at these situations. I want to take something that to me was very difficult and painful and just have a good time with it. Like kind of like when you have a glass of wine with a girlfriend and you're talking and you're laughing about the insane things that happen on dates. I wanted it to have that feel and sort of have that sketch comedy Saturday Night Live feel. And he said, okay, good. Go home and figure out how to write it. And I went, okay. And I got inspired that night about the idea of flipping channels on a television. And so with that, I felt like I had all this freedom because I could do anything. It's like just changing the channel. So I came up with the idea of flipping channels in the estrogen zone and sort of this play on the Twilight Zone. And because I think relationships can be so bizarre, like you are stuck in the Twilight Zone. So I wrote like a great deal of the show in one night and went back to class the next day and everyone was laughing and enjoying what I'd written. And I wrote the whole show in like 2.5 weeks and did it at Nadine Baum at the Walnut Center.
What was it like to come up with a one-woman show? It seems like it's a lot of pressure because it's all on you. Every single aspect's on you. And it's, in a way, it's a little bit liberating because you have all the control, but at the same time, you have to rely all on you. So tell me about that.
Well, I think you pretty much nailed it on the head. I mean, what I found it extremely freeing because I think as an actress or a singer, you deal with a lot of rejection and self-doubt and, you know, wanting to be perfect and wanting to nail it. And the thing I loved about writing my one-woman show is it's what I want. You know, my characters are what I came up with. It's like, yeah, I have full control. And yeah, it is all on you, but it's like I'm up on stage playing for an hour and I crack myself up. I just hope everyone else thinks it's funny. You know, so it's always a joy when things that made me laugh when I was writing them make other people laugh too. So I love it. Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. I mean, 1 hour on stage by yourself, my voice gets really tired and I just got over laryngitis and, you know, it's hard, but it's super, super fun. And it's like the show writes itself. I mean, all my friends and myself have a gold mine of hilarious things that have happened to us. So it's just fun. And the cool thing about it too is, you know, I've had people say, that they really loved it and laughed, but I think it makes people think too, because underlying there's a message, you know, to it all. So that's my goal, is to sort of shock people, make them laugh, but I want them to go home and think later. I've had a couple guys tell me they learned things too, which I thought was good.
And let's talk a little bit specifically, you're co-opting these famous Disney songs and such and making them something else. So tell us a little bit about that and maybe specifically what songs you've used.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've researched a lot about also just what is possible with parodies. You know, you have to be careful when you're taking someone else's work. You know, you don't want to do something that is not good. But the great thing about parodies, you know, you've got Weird Al Yankovic and all these people. You can do really amazing things. They need to allude to the original, which mine do. And so, you know, for me, I think growing up, one of the deals with falling in love and finding that perfect relationship and getting married and all these things that women have a lot of pressure about and the fairy tales is we grow up with these idealized Disney princesses and this perfect thing. And, you know, at the end, the credits roll and you don't get to see where they fight over money and they, you know, whatever, do all these things. So I took things like The Little Mermaid, and what you see is it's her dating video after she's divorced her Prince Charming, you know? And so it's like her trying to find love again, and she sings It's Part of Your World is the parody, but it's called Need Not Apply, and it's her literally going, saying all the things she doesn't want this time and the things she's looking for, and it's her frustrations. I have that. And then I have a very Mary Poppins-esque character that kind of does a children's show. And so she sings like a Mr. Rogers parody, Welcome to the Neighborhood. You know, she's getting dressed and putting on her hat, kind of like he does at the beginning of his show. But it's all about menstruation. Because I think there's a lot of things, too, as we grow up, like that you don't hear about, the horror stories. You hear them sometimes, but there's other things too that you don't hear about. And I thought, how cool would that have been to have a children's show growing up that really, you know, laid it out there for you. And then I do a parody of Spoonful of Sugar, but it's all about sex.
I think a lot about what is taboo as far as women's topics and like menstruation and sexuality. So I guess I'm curious to hear your thoughts on why are these things considered taboo for women to talk about?
I don't know. I think maybe part of it, too, is we're in the South. So there's this, like, being a lady kind of thing. I mean, when I went to Chicago, I really, when I was writing this show, struggled a lot because there were things I wanted to say. And I thought, oh, I'm really pushing the envelope with that. I went to Chicago and I was like, my show is rated G because the things they're doing there is so, I mean, it's so much more over the top than anything I do. I mean, I allude to a lot of things, but there's some language, definitely. But there I was shocked at some of the things. So I think there's a little bit of the Southern sensibilities, but it's also that idea of, yeah, you're not supposed to talk about it or something. I don't know what it is. It's a cultural thing for sure, and I don't like it. And I feel like I do like to shock people with the way I talk sometimes, but to me, it's owning myself. Like, well, somebody said something to me a long time ago. That they said, if you're doing something that you can't talk about to everybody, you shouldn't be doing it. And I loved that. You know, I thought, that's so true. And I think a lot of times we do, you know, even in relationships. And also, I mean, aside from wanting to push the taboos of women and women comedians and feeling like we can own things the way men can, I also want to really... I wanted to talk about the stereotypes of women. Like, there's this stereotype for women that men like sex more than women do. That the woman's always the one with the headache. The woman's always the one going, no, honey, not tonight. And in my experience, in the experience of my girlfriends, that is the opposite. You know, so I was kind of, I'm kind of furious about that particular stereotype. And also, you know, I see so many of my amazing, educated, cool, like accomplished friends who are so bored that they choose to date men who are terrible for them. And my show is not about men being bad. This is not a male bashing show. This is for men and women. What this show is about is people actively making choices to be in relationships that they know from the get-go are wrong and bad because they're so lonely and they feel so much pressure to be in a relationship.
Echo Sibley's one-woman play, Flippin' Channels in the Estrogen Zone, will be performed Sunday and Monday nights beginning at 8 at the Stolen Glass in Fayetteville. There are discounts for students with valid ID. She'll also perform at Caribe Restaurant and Cantina in Eureka Springs on Valentine's Night at 7. She talked with Katie Hendrickson at KUAF earlier this month.
On The Next Humankind, we consider the dilemma of bullying by school children that sometimes leads to tragedy. Beyond better monitoring of the problem, how can the atmosphere at schools be made more respectful and kind? Also, the story of a woman who gained self-acceptance after suffering severe burns. I'm David Freudberg. Join us for Humankind.
Listen this Saturday at noon to KUAF 3.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Barcelona.
Barcelona?
Yeah, it's in Crawford County, close to Oklahoma, close to the Arkansas-Oklahoma border.
Barcelona.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in a city and you have trash and recycling pickup, no doubt it's been altered somewhat this week. The city of Bentonville just this morning, not too long ago, announced what they're doing for the rest of this week. So if you live in Bentonville and you have trash and recycling, here's what you do. Thursday and Friday routes are to be run as scheduled. The Wednesday routes, yesterday's, will be collected tomorrow. Monday and Tuesday, which were missed because of the weather, will be collected on Saturday. All of this pending, of course, any more cancellations or delays because of inclement weather later.
I saw something on Facebook today that Asylum Springs mm-hmm. didn't miss any of their weather or any of the garbage
wow.
pickup because of weather. So.
Mine is out on the curb today. I understand because I live up a hill on Mount Sequoia. I understand if they don't get to it, but it's out there.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening.
Yep. As we leave today's show, George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville yesterday announced that the husband and wife duo of Shovels and Rope will perform at the venue February 23rd. So we will leave with Shovels and Rope. Oh, be joyful.
Oh, be joyful. Is that what you're brewing? Does your daddy know that's what you're doing? His little girl's got a red. Out to ruin, she was giving them the country away. Machete in the trees. Though.